Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? It's Lynn Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode. You know, we just had a crazy weekend with no UFC fights, no MMA at all. You know, there was no ONE Championship on, there was no Bellator on, there was no Cage Warriors on, there was no nothing. There was no nothing on to watch, and but they did just have WrestleMania. Now, I'm not into the wrestling as much as I used to be. You know, I was definitely a lot more into that when I was younger, but I know there was a ton of people that were you know, glued to their TVs watching that, and I know my boy Lee was as well. He was definitely watching that, so we're gonna want to break down a lot of the events that went down at WrestleMania this weekend, and then after that, you know, we're gonna get into UFC 236. That's actually going down this coming weekend. I'm not sure exactly about the times, but I'm thinking in about 72 hours from right now should be the start of the prelims. Yeah, 72 hours. So 3 days from right now, we should be watching the start of the pay-per-view pretty much. If you're into the prelims, which I always watch the prelims, so I'll be watching it in 3 days, and I'll be hyped for that one. I'm definitely excited for that one. Lee, you in here, bro?
Yo, what up, man?
What happened?
Oh, man, it's snowing out here, and I had to go run an errand, and I thought I was basically out and about in this weather, and, you know, but I'm here. I'm safe.
Word. Good to hear it. Good to hear you made it through the storm.
Yeah, man, so we got a lot to talk about tonight.
Yeah, I was just giving him a quick intro, just saying that, you know, we definitely want to preview, well, no, actually, we're going to preview UFC 236, but we also, but first, we want to break down the events of WrestleMania that went down, so. I was telling the people I didn't watch it, but I know my boy Lee was watching it, so I know you'll be able to break down a lot of the events that happened for our listeners.
Yeah, I watched.
So we could.
I didn't watch every match, but I watched most of the big matches because, as you know, the total event was 7.5 hours long. I can't give Vince McMahon that much time, bro. I just can't do it.
Yeah, that's a long time. Man, they really go that long?
Man, it's ridiculous, man. It's like it's an all-day event, dog.
Yeah, I can't be sitting in front of the TV for no damn 7 hours. Crazy. I have a hard enough time sitting still going from the prelims and then watching through the prelims all the way through the main card, never mind. And that's only like maybe 4 or 5 hours, never mind, that's 7.5 hours. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember what WrestleMania used to be, maybe 4 to 6 matches, maybe 8 matches. Now it's like you got all these matches, then you got 2 battle royals, then you got entertainment, you got somebody. Man, let's just get back to the old days, man. WrestleMania shouldn't be no more than 10 matches, no more than 3 hours, no, and that's it. You don't need an all-day event. And then it was held outside.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, that's. Oh my bad. Well, that's crazy. What would you say were some of your favorite moments? Or favorite matches?
My favorite moment was Brock Lesnar losing. That was definitely my favorite moment.
Wait, what did you say? I think it broke up. What did you say was your favorite moment?
My favorite moment was Brock Lesnar losing.
Oh, that's great. He lost? That's great.
Yeah, he finally lost, man. And I think the reason that he lost is because, you know, I think the WWE is going to let him go ahead and prepare for his fight with DC and do what he got to do with USADA and stuff like that. So I think the WWE doing him a solid with that one. But the thing was, he lost him under 5 minutes. And a title fight, normally, you know, that's one of their big belts. And that was the opening match of WrestleMania, and it was over in less than 5 minutes. So it was like, wow. So, and then, you know, Paul Heyman said that, you know, him and Brock was on the flight to Vegas. So you know what that means. So, you know, that's the one out there. But once again, you know, I just don't see – I think we'll talk about that probably a little later, but I just don't see how he's deserving of a title shot in the UFC. I just don't understand that part. But back to WrestleMania. I want to say my low light was Charlotte Flair losing to Becky and Ronda. When you watch the match, she's so much better than both of them two combined. She's a better wrestler than both of them combined. I mean, she carried that match from the beginning to the end. If you was to watch the match, there's no doubt who the best wrestler is, who the best performer is. And she could do so much in the ring. And I knew Becky would win. And I knew that Charlotte would probably either be pinned or be tapped out. But they ended up having a fluky ending where Ronda Rousey ended up getting pinned, which actually played good in my book because, you know, she's going to be gone for a while. They said she was going to be gone for a while. You know, she's trying to have a kid. So, you know, it is what it is. Another highlight that I really liked was Shane McMahon versus The Miz. Man, The Miz and Shane actually, I can say they stole the show, but it was basically shit was in a street fight because they were fighting all over MetLife Stadium. And then the finish came when The Miz suplexed Shane to a table like 15 feet. It had to be more than 15 feet high. It had to be at least 20 feet high. And it was just crazy, man. But, you know, WrestleMania is a spectacle now, man. You know, it's a big event. Triple H versus Dave Bautista. I think you're talking about funny, man. Two old guys in there wrestling, you know.
How Triple H finally beat. That's one thing that I wanted to know is, because the weird thing about it is that I didn't hear literally anything. I didn't hear one person talk about that match. I almost thought that it just didn't even happen because I didn't hear a single word about it. Was it not a good match?
Well, it was a typical Triple H match, you know. Of course, he made it no holds barred. So basically, him and Dave, you know, they was going at it. Dave brings in the ring steps, you know, but Triple H ended up powerbombing him on the ring steps. They hit him with a pedigree, and Dave kicked out. And then Dave DDT Triple H on the steps. And Triple H ended up kicking out. And then Ric Flair came down to help Triple H out to get the win. He ended up hitting Dave in the head with the sledgehammer and then doing the pedigree for the 1-2-3. I mean, but it was just a typical Triple H match. It wasn't nothing special about the match. It wasn't like, you know, they did some kind of, you know, crazy stunt or nothing like that. It wasn't nothing like that, so. But, you know, WrestleMania is WrestleMania, man. It's crazy that they can sell out a football stadium for a wrestling match. For wrestling matches, I would say.
All right, well, one thing is that I wanted to ask you is, why do you think that, like, in an era where you have so many new guys going into the WWE and they like all these new stars, why do you think that there was a need to have a Triple H versus Batista match? I mean, back when I used to watch wrestling, those guys were like the top guys, but that was like, you know, 15 years ago. Like, how come they need to do that match now at WrestleMania? Don't they have bigger matches with new stars than that?
Well, you know, it's one thing about WrestleMania, if you ever watched one, I'm quite sure you have, they always have, like, nostalgia matches where they have old guys come back and be in a match with The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, when Kurt Angle just came back in WWE. They always have nostalgia matches basically on big cards like that. It's just one of the ways they do business, man. It's just like with the Royal Rumble. They have a couple, two, three old guys enter the Royal Rumble, you know, just to get that pop or whatever. But this one kind of played out where Ric Flair was excited. It was his birthday celebration, and Dave Batista had beat him up. And then the next week, he was like, I think I got your attention now, Triple H. And, you know, Triple H was mad. And he was like, so he challenged Dave to a match. And then Dave said, I won. I got what I want or whatever. So, you know, but that's just for, you know, I guess for the parents that actually take their kids to watch WrestleMania or, you know, old guys like me that watch it. So, I could do without the old guys personally. I think they have so many young talent that they should be showcasing the young guys instead of taking up three spots with old guys. So hopefully that'll be something they go away from down the stretch.
And another thing that I wanted to ask you about is Kofi Kingston. So you actually wrote a piece. So on our show, we've, you know, for listeners that have heard us mention this before, you know, we write for the Scrap News and we represent the Scrap to the fullest. You know, shout out to the Scrap. And Lee had actually written an article not too long ago, which addressed the WWE and the lack of Black world champions there has been, you know, in years past as of recent. And one of the main subjects of the article, if I'm not mistaken, was Kofi Kingston, you know, being that they just kind of put him into that storyline, you know, where he was maybe going to get a world title shot at WrestleMania. Then at that time, I don't know if it was set in stone yet that he had the match, but then he did end up getting the match with Daniel Bryan. And so what happened with the match?
I'm glad you asked me that, Keith. Yes, I did write an article about the lack of Black champions within WWE. If you look at the history of WWE, you know, specifically maybe over the last 15 to 20 years, you know, they only had two Black champions, The Rock, who basically doesn't, as when he's a performer, because in WWE, he more embraces Samoan side than being Black. So you really can't some people say that, okay, The Rock was a champ, but I say that during the last 15, 20 years, the last champion was Mark Henry in 2013. So, you know, that's kind of crazy when the number of black athletes the wrestlers they had come through there. And when Kofi Kingston won, and I got to say, when he won, the whole stadium went crazy. The whole stadium went crazy. Whole stadium counted 1, 2, 3, and then it was just an eruption. And I was sitting here, and I was like, man, I can't believe it. He actually did it. I thought the WWE would try to do something shady, but they didn't. They actually did the right thing, in my opinion. And, you know, Daniel Bryan and Kofi put on a hell of a match, man. I mean, Daniel Bryan is one of the best wrestlers, one of the best wrestlers in the world, coming from, you know, he's been an indie wrestler. And then, you know, he was in Ring of Honor. And then he finally got a break with WWE. And then, of course, you know, he had to retire, semi-retire because of concussions in his neck. And then basically he's been back about a year and a half now. And, man, him and Kofi, they had a hell of a match, man. And now it's time to see what the WWE going to do. Are they going to let Kofi be a real champ, maybe keep the belt for like 2 or 3 months, you know? Or are they going to just hire him, drop the belt at the next pay-per-view just to say that, you know, we had a black champ? So we'll see what happens, but it was a great match, man. If you can catch the highlights of it, check the highlights out. And, you know, I watched every minute of that match. And thanks for plugging my article, too, buddy. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, of course, absolutely.
Yeah. Shout out to the scrap. Shout out to the scrap. Like Keith said, man, you know, we do some side things with them. You know, as far as writing articles and stuff like that. Actually, I wrote another article for today. I'm trying to get a green light to write one. Another one about something that's not really combat sports related. I'm just waiting to hear back from Joel to see if he'll give me the green light to write about it.
Yeah, everybody go check out that article on the scrap that Lee did that we just talked about, you know, addressing the WWE's lack of black world champions, you know, in recent years. And it's just funny how they might have even read your article, bro, because all of a sudden now Kofi Kingston won the title. So we have a caller on right now. Maybe they have something to say about this. I'm gonna see who's on the line and we'll check it out. Yo,
y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's going on, bro?
Yep, what's going on, man? It's Rodney.
What up, Rodney? We just
talking. So long since I've been on the show.
Yeah, we were just actually, I was just asking Lee about some of his favorite matches at WrestleMania this past weekend, because, you know, I didn't watch it, but I knew he watched it. And, you know, the one that we were actually, you know, we were just getting through, I asked him about Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan's match, because I don't know how it went. And did you watch the event?
Yeah, I watched it. I saw a majority of the event. And I saw the match. I saw it live.
What did you think of how did the match go?
I think it was a really good match. It didn't wow me, but it had me on the edge of my seat. As I was watching it, even though I was rooting for Kofi, and it was obvious I was rooting for Kofi, I couldn't help but just admire how great of a wrestler Daniel Bryan is, too. How great of a submission specialist he is. incredible as a technician, technically sound. Like, it was hard to deny that, but it was also like some moments that wow you. Like, it was just everything. The match was really good. The story that was being told through it. It was hard to deny you enjoying the match, and also the crowd made it somewhat enjoyable as well.
Yeah, I will have to agree with that. Daniel Bryan definitely made Kofi earn it, and actually, if when you watch a wrestling match, normally somebody's carrying the match. Daniel actually carried the match for maybe the first half of the match, and then Kofi kind of picked it up. Then Daniel Bryan carried the match some more. And, you know, Kofi finally got the pin. But it was, like Robbie said, it was Daniel Bryan did a hell of a job in there, man. And, you know, if Daniel Bryan would have won, I don't think I could have been mad because of the way he performed, but I would have been upset that WWE missed the opportunity to actually run with Kofi as a champ and actually make a statement. And that was my main thing about Kofi actually winning it, is that they can actually make a statement to their fan base that, you know, they're not just little white kids that go watch WWE events. There's little black kids to go watch it, little brown kids, little Asian kids, boys, girls, and I think they actually did what I thought they would do, and I was actually happy for them.
Okay. Majority of that I pretty much agree with. The only thing I would say is I would have been very upset if Kofi wouldn't have won. Not just because I feel like he deserved it, and even though I understand Lee's point. But at the end of the day, the thing about WrestleMania, like the picture that WWE paints as far as what WrestleMania is where history is being made and where dreams come true. So it would have been weird, like that would have been the part I do agree with Lee, that would have been a completely missed opportunity if they would not have let Kofi win that title, no matter how great of a champion Daniel Bryan is. Because even though I'm Kofi Mania all the way, at the end of the day, how can you not love Daniel Bryan? I've been watching Daniel Bryan since the NXT days, so I've never had anything against Daniel Bryan, but it was Kofi's time. And it was a beautiful moment regardless when he did win. So you can't be mad at him winning. But I do understand Lee's point if he wouldn't have won. But it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And Lee, you want to be honest with you, bro?
Uh-huh.
I ain't going to lie.
Go ahead.
At first, what were you about to say?
Yeah, go ahead.
At first, when Kofi had the title over his shoulder, it looked kind of weird, man. And not weird as in a bad way. It was more of, and shout out to you with the article, by the way. It was weird, more of me not being used to seeing someone of that color have that championship. And it was still beautiful, but it was just new. So hopefully we get more of a racial balance from now on as far as that. Because at the end of the day, even though I say black excellence all day, every day, and I was running with the we've crowned the black king thing. At the end of the day, I want everybody to win, because it's not like I have anything against all the white wrestlers. Like, 4 out of 5 of my top 5 favorite wrestlers are white anyway. So, but at the end of the day, we want it to be equality as far as who gets opportunities either way. I don't mind Mustafa Ali actually getting another title shot again at the WWE Championship. I wouldn't mind seeing Kofi versus Drew after the Superstar Shakedown, because I remember they used to go at it for the IC Championship back in 2010 and Over the Limit. Seeing that now with a more improved Drew, I'll be excited about that. Like, I want to see everybody get title shots. I wouldn't mind seeing Big E get a WWE championship shot in the future. Like, I think he's a great wrestler and great on the mic. Maybe Xavier, a few others. So I can go all day. But at the end of the day, we want equality for all races to get a title shot, not just one. That's all that we're fighting for. Even though we're more focused on, we need more black champions. At the end of the day, we just want that so everybody from every race can get that title shot.
Yeah, I think like I wrote in my article, I was like, you know, black female wrestlers have definitely been able to shine within WWE, and I think black wrestlers haven't. Even Asuka's been champ. I mean, you know, WWE has a big chance to do something special because of the demographic of people that watch their product. Because you have a multitude of people that watch it. You got age groups that watch. You got from, like my aunt, she was 20 years older than me. So you had her generation. Then you got my generation. And then you got my son's generation. Then you got my grandson's generation. All can sit down and watch wrestling together. And I think the WWE,
right.
You know, it's certain things you can do to be a organization that includes everybody. And Sunday was a great step towards that. And another way they did that was having the first female match be the WrestleMania main event.
Main event, yeah.
I mean, whoever would have thought that females were the main event WrestleMania 20, 25 years ago? I mean,
yeah, they went a long way, though. They messed it up a little bit, but it worked out in the end.
Actually, I was telling Keys, I was kind of glad that they botched the ending because Charlotte deserved better.
No,
than
not,
that
not the ending. I'm talking about the storyline as a whole.
Oh, yeah. Basically, Charlotte should have never been in the match. It should have been Becky and Ronda from the get-go because that's what everybody wanted to see. But when you watch the match, I was glad Charlotte was in it because she's better than them. She's a better performer than them. How do you feel about that? Did you get the same feeling watching the match that she's better than both of them, or am I off base?
Let me say this. At the end of the day, when it was first suggested of Charlotte being in the match, even though I feel like it's not needed, I wasn't mad at it because at the end of the day, Charlotte is a great wrestler. You can't deny that. The problem was WWE was so inconsistent with the storylines, and they keep making it, and the storylines made it seem like they're forcing her in the match. One moment they got Becky suspended, and it was so planned that it's like, now we need someone that'll stay in their place, and it's Charlotte Flair. And then when Becky comes back and they finally lift the suspension while she's even more hurt and Charlotte's fully healthy, the stipulations for the match in Fastlane was if you lose to Charlotte, you won't be in the main event of WrestleMania. If you beat Charlotte, you'll be added to the match. But it's like, well, Charlotte is safe either way. Y'all really want her in this match. Because Becky was the winner. No matter how y'all feel about how Becky got in the Royal Rumble, either way, she's the Royal Rumble winner. So now it seems like, because in my mind, it was like, oh, all y'all got to do is just set up Fastlane, Charlotte versus Becky, whoever wins that match gets to be in the match. No, Charlotte was safe either way. And it kind of put a bad taste in your mouth, which is why people are constantly saying, oh, she didn't work for it. She's only getting it because she's Ric Flair's daughter. Actually, I remember I had an argument with my guy brother slash best friend Josh, because he doesn't respect Charlotte because he felt like she's earned everything, a hell of a push because of her name. And I kept trying to explain to him, bro, at the end of the day, you can have the best last name all you want. If you're not a great wrestler, no one would care. Even though Charlotte had the last name Flair, and which helped her get a little bit more of a push than everybody else has, she's done the best she had with that opportunity and took a mile with those. We can't deny that. We've got great WrestleMania matches, and she's made some good history. Some, they overdid it with her, but it's not her fault. Just like the Roman Reigns push, which led him to be booed every 5 minutes before the cancer situation.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I wasn't mad at Charlotte being added to the match too much, because even though she wasn't needed, she probably would make the match better because she's an incredible wrestler. But the way they painted the picture involving her, it just sucked. So it was like, goodness gracious. But at the end of the day, Charlotte is great at what she does, because she sells the, yeah, I get what I want because I'm Ric Flair's daughter. So what? I'm Ric Flair's daughter. I can do whatever I want. She plays that role so well. You can't be mad at it. Hell, it's the reason why Becky is who she is now, because she got this the spot to be added to the SmackDown Women's Championship at SummerSlam last year, which led her to win, which made Becky ticked off, which formed the man. So if it wasn't for Charlotte being Charlotte Flair, this wouldn't have happened, if we're being honest.
Yep. But you know who got the short end of the stick was Asuka, man. They did her all kind of wrong.
God.
It was like first she closed in the WWE undefeated. She goes to WrestleMania. Y'all give her first loss. Okay.
We'll take that.
I'll take that because she lost to Charlotte. You know, it's her first WrestleMania,
right?
Whatever.
And Charlotte ain't no pushover.
So
you can't be, even though that sucks, you can't be too mad at that. But then again, the Carmella and James Ellsworth thing.
Yeah, and then to have her win the belt the one that she just recently won. And for her to drop it to Charlotte the week before WrestleMania.
2 weeks.
That was just like
2 weeks before.
Okay. That was just bad booking. You don't have to have
what makes that worse, there was supposed to be a Fatal 4-Way number one contenders match to see who Asuka would face for that championship. They scratched that. And it was randomly out of nowhere. It wasn't promoted. They didn't mention, hey guys, guess what? A new match has been added to the slot. The commentators didn't even know about this. This was randomly out of nowhere. First came out after Charlotte did her quick segment. I was thinking, oh, Charlotte must be doing this match to warm up and prove to them, yeah, just remember, I'm a threat. I could beat the best woman on SmackDown. Instead, the title was on the line. And it's like, what? Let's not forget, that was a great match. But I was like, it's a great match as long as Asuka can win. When Asuka didn't win, I was heated. I was so heated.
Yeah,
And that battle royal that no one cares about.
Yeah, I'm like, WWE could have did so much better than that. If you didn't want to have a SmackDown title match on WrestleMania, you don't have to. There's a lot of superstars that don't wrestle at WrestleMania. So, you know, they could have left the belt on it, but hey, Keith, what's up, man?
Yeah, actually, that's perfect timing. Yo, Ronnie, thank you for jumping on, bro. We go about to jump into some UFC 236 preview right now.
Oh, yeah, man. Go ahead. I need to catch up with some UFC stuff anyway, man.
All right, bro. You want to stay on? That's cool. We have a couple calls on the line right now. I want to see what these guys are talking about. But we're definitely jumping into the UFC thing now. So hopefully these people aren't trying to kill me.
Finish studying. What you say, Lee?
I said, thanks, man, for the call, man. Hey, we'll rock on Twitter.
Thank you. Definitely. I got stay for a test tomorrow, so I'm gonna talk to y'all later. Appreciate it, man. I miss y'all so much.
No doubt, Ronnie.
Y'all be safe.
Yo.
All right, so UFC 276 this weekend. We got a caller on the line right now. Who's on the line?
Hiram, what's up, man?
Oh, what up, bro? One of our scrap brothers
what up?
On the line, baby.
I told you I would call in.
What the hell?
Yo.
Who is it again?
You guys hear me?
Yeah. What's up,
what
bro?
What up, man? What up,
man?
Man?
Hey, we just hanging in there.
For... What happened?
We just about to get into this UFC 236 preview, you know.
Heck yeah, it's going to be an amazing card. Thank you, man. I was supposed to call in a few weeks ago, but I slacked a little bit. My apologies.
Nah, it's all good.
Okay.
All good. One thing I just want to jump into this right now is I just want to ask you. So, Kelvin Gastelum and Israel Adesanya for the interim. What's that? That's not welterweight. Interim middleweight belt.
I've been back and forth a little bit. I've been going back and forth. I'm gonna go with the style bender only because I just feel it's just his time. But I wouldn't be surprised if Kelvin got the upset. Kelvin pushes a really fast pace. Probably the most experienced, the most talented guy that Israel has fought to date. I would say that most skilled guy is Anderson Silva, but he's out of his prime. So, you know, I'm not going to say it's the best guy he's fought to date because it's not. Kelvin's young. He's still, you know what I mean? He's hungry and he pushes the pace and he hits hard too. So even though Israel is hard to hit, he gets hit by Kelvin. He will feel it. You know what I mean? So he has to be on his P's and Q's. Because he isn't going to run through him like he ran through Brad Tavares or Derek Brunson, nothing like that. This is going to be his biggest test to date. And if he isn't on, if he's off a little bit, man, Kelvin's going to push the pace. He's going to try to do the same thing that he did to Uriah Hall in the Ultimate Fighter finale to Israel Adesanya. He's going to try to push him up against the cage. He's going to try to take him down. He's going to grind him. He's going to try to use that kickboxing that he has a little bit, you know what I mean, and pull out a decision. Stylebender can keep his distance, do what he does. I think he can knock out Kelvin Gastelum.
Actually, I'm going with Israel also, but I don't think he's gonna do a lot of exchanging with Kevin. I think he's gonna keep Kevin at distance, keep him at bay. I think he's gonna use his kicks and his jab, and that's gonna frustrate Kevin. And we really don't know about Gastelum's cardio, so Gastelum do in the championship rounds. So I think if Israel can get him to the championship round and basically start pouring on the kicks and the jabs, then he'll have an opportunity to finish Kevin. But Israel cannot go into this fight and make a mistake. If he makes
one mistake, he
will get knocked out. He will get put to sleep by Gastelum. Gastelum is one guy that – when people say one-punch power, he is that one guy that has one-punch power that can put you to sleep. So Israel can't go in there with trying to be styling and profiling, being cool and doing a little tricky stuff in the octagon, or he will find himself getting picked up off the canvas and losing his shot and being the interim champion. I'm going with Israel.
Ooh,
I think it'll be by decision. I think he'll turn it on in the championship rounds. I think it'll be a very good fight, especially if Kelvin
Could you imagine what a Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker main event in Australia would do? You know the numbers that would freaking do to unify them belts?
Man, you know, Bobby Knuckles is my guy. Me and Key is a bear. Fans of Bobby Knuckles. But I'm at the point now where it feels like I haven't seen him fight in so long that maybe I think Ring Rust would definitely pay a big role in his next fight because he's been out of the ring that long. And normally, I'm not a fan of ring rust because, you know, them guys train so much. But it's a difference between training and actually fighting. So
exactly.
It would definitely be a big time fight. But, you know, Keys, who you got your early prediction on between Israel and Kelvin Gastelum?
Oh yeah, Adesanya all day.
Adesanya, you gotta go.
I'd see Adesanya is Gastelum doesn't have as poor of a fight IQ as Derek Brunson. So it's not like I can say that Adesanya can get him out of there like within the first two rounds or anything like that. I think the Brunson was like a second round. So I don't see that. I just think that Adesanya probably, if I had to pick, like if I had to bet one thing, I'd probably say Adesanya by like unanimous decision or something like that. Definitely Adesanya by decision if I had to bet.
So quick question. So quick question. Neither one of you guys think that Adesanya can finish Gastelum?
No. I'll get into that. I think he can, but I don't think I think he definitely can because I think he's a smarter striker than Gastelum. I think Gastelum's is more sloppy compared to Adesanya is so well calculated and he's so well calculated in the way he fights, and that's why like I think if Gastelum were to it's ironic that Gastelum said what he did about Silva being not as good because I don't even think Gastelum. I'm not even sure that Gastelum would have. I mean, like, I'm not sure Gastelum would even beat Silva. Like, Silva's still a really good striker. Like, put him versus Mo Chavez, like, he's going to give a test to any good striker, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he heard DC at 200.
Exactly. You know, he's gonna give a true test to anybody. People make it seem like, you know, he's not, you know, a mastermind in the octagon anymore. So, you know, Gastelum, I think Gastelum would be looking shaky versus Anderson Silva just for Adesanya. I think Adesanya just – the reason why the fight was the way it was is because both guys were making reads ahead of time on each other, and they're just both – they're both defensive and offensive at the same time. They're so both heavily cautious fighters, and they're so smart. You know, it's just – the fight looked like it was happening in the Matrix or something. So so a lot of people would just, you know, some people didn't like the fight and some people did, but it was like the people that did like it could really like see what was going on in the fight. And then the people that didn't really appreciate it were the ones that, you know, just want to see a knockout and can't, don't really know, you know, what good strikers do. So that's kind of what happened there. And Gastelum, I don't necessarily think he's a great striker. I mean, he's hyped up with like certain, you know, wins, like, you know, they hype him. He beat, like, old guys, you know what I mean? He, you know, what he finished, Vitor Belfort and Bisping, but that's not really that impressive to me. I mean, them guys, they were good strikers back in the day. I mean, Bisping, his days were behind him at that point. Belfort's days were behind him at that point. I mean, these guys, you know, his last couple wins, it doesn't impress me. Besides Jacare, I really don't see, like, I just left to say, who has he fought? I mean, yeah, you beat a world champion, world champion.
But remember, we have to remember sometimes I feel like people seem to forget what Whittaker is. I mean, with Gastelum, remember the high level guys that he also has beaten at 170. You know what I mean? He beat a few high level guys that were like world class, like former champions. You know what I mean? He beat
Woodley.
Guys at 170.
He beat Woodley.
Exactly. Like, No, he lost to Willie. Willie won that decision.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Willie.
No, but Willie won a close decision. But remember, he also beat Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall was like the next big thing. You know what I mean? Like that hype train, he crashed that. I mean, Uriah Hall was coming off that spinning heel kick of the Ultimate Fighter and like dead, you know what I mean? So he shut the Uriah Hall hype train down. He's beaten a few guys at 170. He was supposed to be played as the next champion at 170 before he couldn't make the weight anymore and started missing weight every other fight. But at 170, I mean, at 185, I mean, and even in the Weidman fight, if it wasn't for him getting caught in the arm triangle, I mean, he rocked Weidman in that first round and knocked him halfway across the cage. You know, so I definitely think Kelvin, even though I agree with you, he has fought in a couple of guys and stuff like that, but I truly feel that he is going to be a world champion, whether it's at 185, with that 170, you know what I mean? He's going to be a world champion. Kelvin Gastelum has that in him. And even, whether it's not now, whether it's in a few years, whether, you know what I mean, whether he steps in a few months or whatever,
no,
I do feel that he'll be champion.
No, I think,
you know, I just...
Yeah, he'll be a world champion. I just
I don't think he's going to get it done Saturday. You know?
Yeah, I just think the two fights he has to get through to be the world champion at middleweight, I just feel like, I don't know. It's kind of like a tough road to have to fight Adesanya and Whitaker, you know, and win back-to-back to be the middleweight champion right now. It's kind of like a tough path for anybody. So, and Gastelum, we'll see what happens. I'm not fully counting him out, but I'm just saying if I had to bet on it right now, I'd bet Adesanya by decision. But I do think that he could drag Gastelum into the deep waters, and he'll drag him into, like, the fourth, fifth round. Let's just say it goes that long. And I think Gastelum will be, you know, his name kind of says it all. Gastelum is going to be very gassed, and he's going to be moving in slow motion.
That's a good one.
It's going to look like Dada 5000 versus Kimbo Slice, rest in peace. But it's going to look like that, you know, how they were, like, moving in slow motion. So that's going to be Gastelum trying to come forward, and then he's going to get caught with a crazy combo. He's going to get finished. So I think if it goes into the fourth, fifth round, then Adesanya is going to get a win by TKO. And if it's, other than that, I would say my first option would be Adesanya by decision.
Yeah, I'm going with him by finish, but yeah, Adesanya for me too.
I think if Adesanya gets him.
Yo, one more. We have a caller on the line. I want to jump a caller on the line right now.
Is it Joel?
I feel bad. They've been waiting for a minute. So, yo, who's on the line?
Will, what's up?
Oh, what's up, brother? How
what's
you doing?
What's up, Will?
What's going on?
Who is it?
Will, Electric Resolve System. How are y'all doing?
Oh,
good,
yo. Yo, I've been trying to get you on.
Yeah, how are y'all doing?
Oh, man, we're doing good, man. Thanks for calling in, man.
Yeah, we're having you call.
So, here's this, though. And that's what I've got for Gastelum, that, like, nobody seems to be talking about. The guy's a decent wrestler. I mean, he's got 50% takedown. Like, his takedown attempts land at 50%. And Adesanya is 85%, you know, defense, and that's good. But I think, like, when you have that threat, I mean, it gives him something to think about. It's not like if he goes in and he's been training wrestling heavy, he could have that as a threat. And I think if he could take him down two times good and do something with it, like ground and pound him a little bit, give him something to think about, I mean, and then you stand back up and they're going like that, he can get on the inside and he can do something. And I think a lot of people are discounting Gastelum in some ways, but nobody's talking about his wrestling at all. And the guy's got wrestling.
That's
a really good point.
I think people ain't talking about his wrestling is because
he hasn't done it.
What was the last time? Yeah, exactly. That's why I think people not thinking that he's going to use that as a weapon. Whereas we haven't really seen Adesanya. Yeah, because we haven't seen Adesanya fight off his back. There's a lot of guys.
Yeah.
If you let them do what they do, they always going to look good.
That's right.
And Adesanya, we haven't seen him fight off his back. We always see him pushing the pace, dictating the style of the fight. But that's a good point, man, that if Kevin can take him down one or two times in the first round, that'll get Adesanya something to think about. Because now you're going to defend a takedown, Kevin can crack you with an overhand right. So if Kevin can do that, but Kevin just can't go to the fourth and fifth round. He's going to have to get Adesanya up out of there between the first and third round. I think if he going to the fourth and fifth round, I'd be surprised if he won the fourth or the fifth round.
I think the only way he could do it is if it becomes a takedown festival. If he proves that he can take him down and then continues that pressure, he could win those rounds. I think. I mean, I believe it's a possibility. But, I mean, if you think about it, if I was his coach, like going into this fight, I would be training, having him to catch a side kick and transition
yep.
to do a takedown. And that's exactly what
yep.
I'd be like, catch a side kick, transition to takedown, and then practicing takedown. Takedown, 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 catching side kicks. And that's what it would be all about, and then the ground and pound. And I mean, because, I mean, he's been so heavy into the boxing thing and getting on the inside and throwing that stupid same combo over and over again, you know, the jab and then the right hook or the jab and the straight cross, you know. And,
yeah,
and it's the
yeah.
same thing over and over again. Now, here's the next part of that, though. If you're Adesanya and with that crazy reach and those crazy legs and you're a kickboxer, you're looking for that Anderson Silva straight up the middle kick to the face, that pow, like the Vitor, a la Vitor Belfort ending. I mean, there's a lot going on there. But I just nobody's talking, even like any of like the, you know, the writers, nobody's talking about Kelvin Gastelum's wrestling. And it's like, what? Like, it's been not been that long ago that, I mean, he beat Uriah Hall with his wrestling. Think about it.
Exactly. I just said that. That's the only way I could see him getting it done is just he pushes a really high pace. And if he can manage to get his hands on Israel and actually get him down and, you know, he could do some damage, you know.
Well, what about, like, Poirier and Holloway? Does anybody else,
Anderson
like,
Silva
catch?
Didn't Anderson Silva catch a couple of Adesanya kicks during that
yep.
fight?
He kind of ate them.
Okay. What we at now?
He was kind of standing there. There was a few. Anderson stood there and took a lot of shots. You know, he took a lot of punches. He kind of just – he had his moments. He was just standing there with his hands down. You know how he likes to do that forever now. But he
yeah.
was doing that,
the
and he was just enjoying
it. Honestly, though, I wouldn't be surprised if Adesanya was trying to set that up, though. I wouldn't be surprised if in his game plan, if he wants Kelvin to try to just because he's a smaller guy, shorter guy, try to grab – you know what I mean? Try to catch some kicks. Fake low, come up high. You know what I mean? Like, that's the type of person Israel Adesanya is. You know what I mean? Every fight he learns from, whether he wins or loses. So I would not be surprised if that was literally part of his game plan. Try to make Kelvin
right.
react to them kicks and try to catch them kicks and then come up high with something.
Sure. I mean, that would be his only recourse to, you know, like to, you know, stuff that game plan. But yeah, it was weird to me that he couldn't do more damage to Anderson Silva, man, especially at his age. Other people have – I feel like there's – like even like Bisping. Bisping made Silva look worse than Adesanya did. You know,
yeah, but
comparatively.
When you get hit, though, I mean, Anderson hit him with a few clean shots. And I think that's when Israel started to give him some respect because Israel started off the fight very loose, very – you know, and once he ate a couple of the old man's punches, I think he realized quick that – Silva could still got that power. He still got that snap, you know what I mean, in his punches. So it's
yeah.
easier said than
still,
done, you know.
He also had to eat the thing of being starstruck by his hero. He was probably weighing
exactly.
pretty
exactly. You know, they call him the new, you know, the modern-day Anderson Silva, you know.
Yeah. So what about
so,
I think
yeah,
another, I think another thing that played a part in that was if you really look at all the signing, he really isn't like a powerful guy. So,
no, he's not.
You know, with a wily veteran like Anderson Silva, who's been in there with some of the best, I don't think Adesanya could really, like, conjure up the power to hit him where he could back him up and be like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, he caught Derek yes. Brunson, but Brunson was a TKO, though. I mean, you know, he
yeah.
couldn't return the strikes. He clipped them. But Adesanya isn't that hard of a puncher, though. You know, most
no,
of his damage is done with kick, knees,
yep.
his jab. So, I don't think
he
probably could hurt
He flustered guys. Like,
yeah.
the way he did Brunson, he flustered him right away. Like, you could tell when he hit Brunson, like, it wasn't even that hard. But the volume and his movement really flustered him right away. And I don't even think, like, it wasn't like he hurt him. He just didn't know how to deal with it. Like and that's what I think got that TKO. It was because he was just so flustered by his movement and just the volume.
So
yeah,
one thing I wanted to say because something that you said actually just sparked my you know my thought about this. I wanted to you know finish up that topic and jump to this is that you said how people aren't talking about Gastelum's wrestling in the same case with the main event in Holloway Poirier 2. You know, everyone's considering, well, what if, you know, Poirier has really shown us more of his striking in like his last three to four, maybe five fights, more of his striking than he has of his wrestling. But
and he's also peaked. And he's also peaked.
Yeah, and
like
he is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. You know, he just got his black belt, and he really hasn't shown us a lot of that. I mean, he did. I forget. He has a couple submission wins recently, but he just hasn't overall shown us a lot of his wrestling. But I think what you said does relate to the main event too, because no one's talking about, you know, Holloway. Everyone's talking about Holloway's great takedown defense, but then again, look at the guys who he apparently had great takedown defense against were guys that really don't. Most of them don't even shoot for takedowns anyways because they're not wrestlers. I mean, maybe like three out of the 10 guys, you know, even have, you know, a significant wrestling background. And then, you know, one out of three of those have like a college, you know, college level wrestling or above background. You know, guys have high school wrestling. You know, Jeremy Stephens barely wrestles too. I mean, Jeremy Stephens has a wrestling background and we never even see him wrestle. So that's an example. But it just in this case is no one's talking about, you know, what if Poirier does get Holloway down? You know, what happens if he ends up putting in some work on the mat? What do you think happens?
I don't know. I've had such a hard time going into this one because I like them both so much, and I almost don't even want to watch the fight because I don't want to see either of them lose. Because, like, I like them both so much, man, and that rarely happens to me where I'm like, damn it. I like, wow. But I think that Poirier needs to be smart. He needs to go into it like he needs to really study that Ortega fight and understand the fluidity of Holloway's striking and be able to parry. I think is one of the most important things. He needs to figure out how to parry those strikes and not get hit. And I think, quite frankly, if he does go into that, and if it's approached the right way and he's really out to win, it's going to be boring for the first couple of rounds, I think. I don't know. It seems to me that, like, and I don't think Holloway's a dummy either, though you kind of see him starting to creep up into, like, buying into his own legend with the, like, in a way, you know, he's not as bad as some of the other guys that get egotistical, but he's starting to kind of, like, I watched some of his radio interviews he did, and when he was talking about the Ortega fight, I watched one, and he's getting a little cocky. And when the guys start to do that is when they open themselves up to, like, you know, being a little more comfortable than they need to be, I think. So I think, like I said, I think of, like, the first couple rounds might be boring. But if I was Poirier's coach, I'd tell him, go out there, you know, don't get hit. Like, throw some stuff at him, don't get hit, see what you can do, and then let's start taking him down in round three, like, because he's not going to be expecting it. Keep it a striking thing, make it seem like you don't have any intention of doing any takedowns, and then when round three hits, take him down immediately.
I kind of disagree. I think he should take him down in the first round. I think if you take him down in the first round, you get him off his game. Because none of his past, none of his against Ortega, he didn't go down. Against his two fights against Aldo, he was never taken down. He probably hasn't been taken down except in practice. I would come out and try to take him down immediately and see how he reacts. See whether or not he can get back up to his feet. See whether or not he can have some defense. You know, just like we said with Gastelum and Adesanya, if you give him something to think about right off the bat, then he's going to always have that in the back of his head. Okay, I'm going to have to defend against the takedown. This guy really can take me down. So I would come out and try to do that in the first round, man. And then, like you said, he's going to have to keep his head moving. If you look at how these guys have been losing to Max, their head don't move. Their head is stationary. So
they also don't parry. They have no parrying. They don't parry the strikes. They don't try to catch the strikes and parry them and then use that lateral movement and, like, throw them off balance within the strike, you know? A lot of the guys, they're almost like they're, like, kind of moving away from him or trying too hard to get in to try to hit him. Yeah, you're exactly right, though. No head movement. No, like, just not necessarily not blocking, but parrying. I feel like nobody tries to parry his strikes and like frustrate him.
Yeah, it seems like guys go in there and say, he's not going to hit me the way he hit everybody else. Okay, so after those 15 punches to the face, when is he going to hit you? Is he going to get tired of punching you in the face? I say no. So I would go out in the first round and try to take him down, bro. What you think, Hollow?
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah, I mean, it's just – You could be right on because, like you said, nobody really does try to take him down. So maybe that's the way to go. Maybe just, like, turn it into a takedown fest. I'd have to look at Poirier's overall stat on his takedown. You know, like, what is his landing rate? And, I mean, you think that, like, Holloway's defense rate is probably deceptive because nobody tries to take him down, really.
Well, Poirier's his takedown accuracy is 41.38%. His takedown average is 1.75 per fight. So, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, I guess that's
so,
what he would be wanting to do is train in that.
So you guys think if Poirier has been chopping up his jiu-jitsu, he's been getting a lot of groundwork and expecting to take Holloway down in the early rounds. Besides that, if he's able to parry and counter-strike effectively versus Holloway, you think he can win in the striking exchanges early too?
I think he could win probably like the third round.
It goes back to his hand movement, Keys. He's going to have to throw punches and keep his head moving. He can't throw punches and not move his head. Because if he becomes predictable, like Ortega was, Max is going to tee off on him. Max may even eat a shot to land two or three shots. So I think Dustin will have to be very sharp with his combos, quick with his combos, but his head move would have to be probably the best he ever had in any fight.
Yeah. I don't. You know, another thing too, though, is like you see the level of like Poirier's striking has peaked. Like it is really, really, really on, better than it's ever been. And could you look at like the guys that now you would say Aldo, and Aldo's a great striker, but I just feel like he was in a rut for so long. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Like I would if you were to put like Poirier versus Aldo right now, I think Poirier would win. That's striking. Like I do. Like cuz it just you see it's like it's brilliant. The way he fought Gaethje was pretty darn good, man. Like it's so I don't want to discount Aldo by saying that like Holloway hasn't faced anybody, you know, but just the way Poirier is peaking right now. I think it's going to be really, really interesting.
No, we can't use Aldo as a measuring stick because Aldo has definitely got away from one of his primary weapons, which definitely made him, like, one of the best champions ever in the UFC. He doesn't leg kick anymore.
You're exactly right. I was waiting for you to say that. You were so right about that.
He doesn't use his leg kicks anymore. They said he suffered an injury to his leg. That's why he doesn't use the leg kick as effective anymore. So basically, when the Aldo we see now isn't the Aldo we've seen in the past because one of his major weapons is gone. And I think if Aldo could somehow bring back or implement his leg kicks back into his game, then I would agree with you. Him and Dustin would definitely be a good fight. But without the leg kicks, I think Dustin will probably get him because basically you turn it into a stand-up fight. And as we can see, Aldo, he can get shots, but he can't take a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And the one thing is one thing that is true. When, I mean, look at that. Is like, look at the way Holloway was just basically able to overwhelm Aldo in both of their fights. You overwhelm him with high volume, and you know he starts to crumble.
Yep.
And a lot of people, you know, say he's, you know, I've seen a ton of people say he's the best 3-round fighter of all time. But when you put Aldo into, you know, championship rounds, it's a different guy.
Yeah.
And one thing too about Poirier that I think, to add to your point about, you know, him, he would beat Aldo. The reason why I would think that is because, one, is that Poirier does really well in the championship rounds. That's why I think this fight, that's why I'm so excited about this fight, because both of these guys really have no problem going 5 rounds. And another thing, about it too, is that when he just fought, when Poirier just fought Alvarez, I forget if it was the first time or the second fight, but there was the one when Alvarez kind of like had Poirier mounted against the cage, and then he threw the illegal 12-6 elbow, like almost on top of Poirier's head, or like on his shoulder or whatever it was. It was the illegal elbow, and then the ref broke it up, and they went back to their corners. It looked like Poirier, he might have had another illegal blow that caused a stoppage, but then actually Poirier got a second win and came back from the dead like a zombie, and then went back in there and finished Alvarez like within a minute, maybe minute and a half after that illegal elbow.
Yeah,
resiliency.
So that's the crazy part about Poirier, is just that he gets these second wins and just comes back out of nowhere. Like, you think that you finish the guy, and then he just comes back and finishes you.
Yep. And he's just, like I said, I think his strike has just peaked. Like, it's really, his striking is really there. It's all peaked. He's sharp. And watching him speak, like, the past 2 weeks, he's very confident, and he's not confident in an asshole way. He's very calm. So I think he could do it. I wouldn't count him out. And then, you know, the betting lines kind of lie, I think, in certain ways, just because they always, you know, swing towards the champ. But I think people are counting him out, and they shouldn't be.
Hey, Keith.
Yo.
We got time to talk about TJ real quick before we sign off?
Uh-oh. Can I start?
Oh, man, I really don't want to get into that.
Hey, let me say one thing.
I got nothing to say about that one, bro.
The whole emotional speech that he gave at that post-fight press conference after Cejudo beat him, that emotional speech made me – that looking at what just happened and looking at that speech makes me really dislike him, because he was so self-righteous and so, like, into, like, oh, he's been robbed and he got screwed over and he's just been wronged so badly. And I'm, like, going, what? Like, it makes it so bad, like, that you were that emotionally charged and, like, you were wronged, but here's the reality – like, I don't care if he ever comes back, quite frankly. Like, after that, like, I thought about it a lot. Like, especially today, I was, like, working, and I'm thinking, like, damn, why did you were so emotional and so charged and so solid and how you were wronged and, oh, you've been stolen from you. And it's like, but wait, look what you were doing, dude. Like, and you were that emotionally charged. You're a, like, deceptive, like, really bad person to do that.
My stance on this is, Cody did tell us, I want to say, during the press conference at the first fight, that, you know, he said TJ was juicing or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did say that. But at the same time, Cody also said he was showing them how to, you know, he was showing everybody else how to get away with it. So when I was thinking about it, I was like, so is everybody on their team juicing and got away with it? Or,
you lie with dogs, you rise with fleas. The saying, you lie with dogs, you rise with fleas. Yep.
Well, that's pretty embarrassing, because Team Alpha Male has been losing left and right for like the past 3 years. Dillashaw is pretty much they've had overall.
Because Chad Mendez is Team Alpha Male, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think Chad Mendez is Team Alpha Male. Yeah.
Yep. And
but
he got
I'm gonna say this, man. I'm gonna say this about TJ. I think TJ, if he wouldn't have went down to 125, if he is a habitual doper, he would have never got caught. It's because he went down to 125 trying to have a super fight with Cejudo that got him caught. I think he got a little cocky and a little reckless with it, and he paid the price for it.
Yes.
I think it's going to be hard for him to come back because at bantamweight, one thing you have to be at bantamweight is you have to have speed and power. I think he'll come back at 35. He probably gonna have. He definitely will have diminished speed, and he probably gonna have definitely diminished power. I hate to say his career will be over, but I think his career will probably be over. I think he'll probably might have to go to Bellator to resurrect his career, or
or one.
I'm just saying, man. He might just have to go to Bellator or one, you know, to resurrect his career or to get back on track. Because he's going to lose the speed. He's going to lose power. And that's at 135.
Yep.
You look at Marlon Moraes. Look at Aljo. Look at
Peter
Yan.
Yep. There are dudes on the rise right now. And that, like you look at Pedro Munhoz. He's awesome. Like he's looking great. There are dudes on the rise in that weight division. 2 years out, he's going to be whatever. Oh, hey,
yeah.
Welcome back, guys.
Yeah. What's your thoughts, Keys?
I don't know. I mean, it's disappointing because, you know, It's sad because he lost, and then he made everybody feel bad that he lost, and he felt bad, and then you find out that he was actually cheating, and then so he was cheating, and then got knocked out. So that's just kind of sad, right there. It's sad in two ways. It's sad because his career is probably over, and it's sad because he was juiced out and got knocked out by Henry Cejudo. So that's just sad. That's a double sad right there. So it's. I don't even know. I mean, the funny thing is, too, like you said, that Garbrandt tried to warn us that he was juicing. And the thing is that I think he was doing this for a much longer time. It's not just for one fight because you saw to come out and say that you have to do a special kind of testing to detect EPO. It goes untraced in the standard test that they do. So and in the initial test they were testing TJ, they never found it.
The test for it is also more expensive. The test for it costs more money, and that's one of the reasons why they make it spotty, like why they throw it around, and it's kind of like it's almost like it's a threat, we'll catch you for this. But you see, like Jeff Nowitzki, like that was a big thing with the cyclers. That's like he was saying, like when he was over the bicyclist.
Lance Armstrong, I looked into it. That EPO is one of the ones they thought Lance Armstrong was doing.
Yep.
My thing is this. You saw him. What is your job? Your job is to prevent and deter guys from doing steroids. I don't care how much a test costs. Then you should be able to do one test to catch everything. I don't care if you have to do it, you do one 6 weeks out, you do one 2 weeks out, you do one the night of the fight, and you do one the night, the day of the fight and the night, the right after the fight. Your job is to make sure everybody is on the up and up. When did money become an issue? Money should never be an issue when you're doing steroid testing and combat sports, because somebody could lose their life in the octagon, the boxing ring, and that's your job.
Somebody could have their life ruined by losing to a steroid person. Like, I mean, you could dash somebody's confidence, their ability to feed their family, you know, because a steroid guy beat them. Like, you get beat so bad by somebody on steroids. Like, what did you say? Like, the TRT thing with Vitor, the way he was wrecking people. I mean, you could get beat really badly by somebody and it would just dash your confidence and shit on your career, and you would be like, wow, how do you feed your family now? You know, it's like, it's a serious, very serious.
And look at Vitor now. Ever since they got rid of TRT, he's not even Vitor Belfort anymore. He's more like Victor Belfort.
Yeah, he's more like punching bag Belfort.
Yeah.
Like, take me down and beat me up, Belfort.
Yeah, man. It's just, you know, it's sad about TJ. I think basically his career in the UFC is basically over. I think he'll probably come back after his 2 years. Somebody will beat him down, and then UFC will cut him, and then he'll go to ONE or Bellator. And, you know, it's just a sad ending, man.
Actually, you know what? I just had this thought right now. I think now this is kind of far out, but and this is what I want to close out with because we're way over time here. They're about to shut us off. But one thing I want to close out with is I think this could be a possible theory 2 years down the line, right? He could move to ONE Championship and chase the Demetrius Johnson fight because Demetrius Johnson is going to
Demetrius Johnson's going to be losing the weight to make the, you know.
Right, yeah, and ONE Championship, their flyweight, isn't their flyweight contested at 135 pounds?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure ONE's flyweight division is at 135 pounds, so it wouldn't be like TJ would have to go back down to 125. He could just fight at bantamweight, but it's bantamweight as flyweight in ONE Championship, and Demetrius Johnson's, I think, going to be the flyweight champion once he wins the Grand Prix. I think in 2 years he'll be the champion. And then Dillashaw wanted that fight in Nascimento anyways. I think he'd probably come back and go challenge Demetrius Johnson and ONE. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah. Man, that's a good forecasting right there. I didn't even think of that. I mean,
that's a really, really sharp projection, man.
Very sharp projection.
But at the same time, though,
Keith, them guys over there at ONE, they all got power and they all pretty fast. It took DJ a round to get used to the speed of them guys over there. So, you know,
and a swollen eye.
Yeah. Like, so
his face looks worse than it ever has after any fight.
Yeah, the guy did tag him a couple times. But I think DJ, you know, well, he hasn't fought since the Cejudo fight, and plus he had knee surgery. So, you know, I give him a pass, you know, saying that maybe, you know, he just had to get back in. But once he got back into the groove of things, he looked like Mighty Mouse, though.
Sure did.
Yeah, he did.
I'm going to jump off, fellas.
Right,
I got to go.
Yeah, no problem. We'll
all
right,
bro.
Right,
thanks for the call, man.
Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you guys. Thank you.
No doubt.
All right, bro,
have a good one.
I'll talk to you both on Fight Night on Twitter.
For
yes,
sure.
Sir.
Cool.
We'll get our official predictions on the main event then.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I got. I mean, we got through a ton of stuff tonight, and yeah, that's it. I'm just hyped for the fights, and I'm ready to go. I'm locked in. Like I always say, stay positive, everybody. We good. Lee, close them out.
Yeah, man. This was a good show tonight, man. Hey, we had Rodney call in. We had Howard call in. Had Will call in. Talked about WrestleMania. Did a little 236 preview. Talked about some TJ Dillashaw. We even snuck in some Mighty Mouse tonight. So, great show. Looking forward to 236 this weekend. And Keys, we can't buy UFC 236 on pay-per-view. It's not on my boxes being able to be bought. So I guess you have to have it through the ESPN Plus. So that's the question that you sent.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't think that they would take it off of cable providers. I didn't know if that was official, but I guess that answers that question.
Yeah. That's pretty lame.
But
it's lame, man.
It's lame.
Yeah, that's lame, man. Well, you know, shout out to all the callers. Shout out to all the listeners. Shout out to my co-host, Keys. Follow us on Twitter. Keys at Keys Real Talk. At LEVANSTIN 757. Also follow the Scrap News. Everybody have a nice night. Be safe. Take care of each other. Peace.